I'm telling you, it's very key in an operation. You don't need something like this, but we need to send him a letter of goodwill, of good wishes, our SMS. I mean, these are the normal things we have. So I found this one by accident. Can Lolly please let us know if people are in hospital or sick so we can contact them? I will send a message of good wishes to him on behalf of the committee. JC will be in and out. Bulalami, well, he's always in and out. Who else is going to take? Mameruti is no more, I think, at our committee, that's right. Yeah, we have to get a replacement that can remind me. I don't know if Bulalami is, but you need to look at Bulalami. We need to do so for Mameruti and for Joe. Yeah. Mr. Lasawe is sick, I've already wished her well, I found her this morning. So she's off for at least another week. When you get more people are here, JP, I think that's the program that we agreed on for next week. But we hand over to you now to finalize matters.
Of the fitters, and the question that was asked yesterday, I thought I will just mention that the reasons for that could include any of the following: where the placenta is not working enough anymore, what we call placental insufficiency, that leads to intrauterine growth retardation or restriction.
But I really feel that, you know, for one truck to be bringing people to a center, a real issue is really. Because I don't know, I left the ticket for the closest system. And that truck presumably at least 50 minutes before that. Up to now, people are held up. So I mean, one truck shouldn't bring a whole metropolitan city to a center. Anyway, JD, let me hand over to you.
Maybe let me also have a bite to say I left at 7 o'clock and I arrived here something like 5 to 9, so almost 2 hours.
So you were on the end too,
eh?
Yes. Yeah, we worked at the end of the year.
But I still think there should be a long-term solution because even on other days, it's very difficult to get people down here. Okay, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. You recall that last time there was Chiwata who made a presentation, and then it was suggested that that it should happen in the country museum. And then therefore we're going to give this an opportunity to report to us what transpired in that meeting of Chiwata.
We've just prepared a note.
We've
just prepared a note for this discussion. And we have discussed the notes with the DG as well in the department. And I think from our side we appreciate the interaction we got from the committee, and we think also this is what they're learning curve in terms of making sure that the consultation processes are detailed and don't leave anything outside the system. And I also wanted to assure the committee that after the meeting last time, we did meet with Chiwata. We did exchange further documentation and the operation plan. That discussion ongoing. In fact, they've also kind of, as part of supporting this process, also developed some training programs themselves that will also assist in the implementation process. So we're together in the implementation process, and we don't foresee any hassles in terms of that aspect. There are two issues which basically we resolved that we have to find a way to deal with them. One is the LLP requirement, and which we all agree that it should remain an issue for discussion, and should be discussed as part of the broader transformation of the judiciary. So the issue of LLP, as we have also put it in the policy document that the minister is working on, that look at the broader aspects of transformation of the judiciary. So they have agreed that will find space for engagement there. So it should not delay the build at this year. We'll still be consulting on this and still be able to find one another on this issue. The second point related to the issue of training, obviously they support that they will also want to be participants in the training program. Especially in view of the fact that most of members of JOASA currently possess the relevant experience and expertise for in a long time or so. So we don't see any difficulty in terms of that. We are having an integrated training program where there will also happen under the auspices of the Market Commission. I want to also assure that one a member of this committee has also agreed to serve that this committee. Dr. Delpo will, as a chairperson of the training committee, will also coordinate the training intervention over the semester so that all parties, just the college, institute, JOASA, around, etc., are put together under the kind of institutions, etc. They had their first meeting today, as I said, to map up. The program are going to approach the whole issue of moving around the training program also. Other than that, we have briefly on this report noted in paragraph 1.3.1 and 1.3.2 on the first page. We've noted the what transpired and the guidance that was given by the committee in the last meeting. We've also highlighted the limited consultation we've undertaken in the past in terms of consultation. You will notice that on the attachment I've given here, the matter of civil jurisdiction has been on the agenda since 2005 at the Market Commission. Every time, we've just been saying that there are still policy discussion around this aspect. We'll be very grateful if we can find finality on the matter, etc., and with all the relevant groups here agreeing with us to make sure. I've also provided a copy of the report, and seven exception copies. This is that copy of the report of the proceedings that transpired at the conference.
Sorry, are you talking about the September Commission?
Yes.
Now, we wanted to report to this committee. We will find that to our summary.
Yes. So, this is just a draft report because there are quite a number of details came from them. So, we will just attach this copy, just, and then as and when the time is, we will find a slot, we will come and make a presentation on the report also. Thanks. I don't know if you want to have anything to
add. Thank you. Can I just ask one question before I open up for questions? What is the, you said the best issue with LLG, what is the status now? Is LLG still a requirement of your budget as a coordinator?
Yes, it remains a requirement and it will be dealt with the revision of the entire monthly cost act. And we have agreed that, because how the process is cut is that LLG or any other cost as may be approved by the minister at the time. So the minister still has the leverage in terms of the section. We can look at any appropriate cost that may come in the place of LLP. So it's not a kind of a stop law. So we agree that it must not be prescribed for any cost, well not prescribed for any other person. For appointing the court not prescribed. For appointing the high court not prescribed. So there's no reason why it must remain there at the original cost. But we are saying for that, instead of us just taking out of the legislation, it will form part of the broader discussion because we have not yet caught up thoroughly on the matter.
Sorry, can I just add to that, just to illustrate how contentious this issue is, if members look at the report some stage, you'll see that the President Chairperson of the Magistrates Commission, and I'm referring to page 10 of the report, about the third paragraph from the bottom, he said he also expressed the need to assess the adequacy of the new LLB in preparing the incumbent to take over the function and role of the magistrate and argued the possibility that the new four-year LLB degree does not appear to equip graduates sufficiently enough to meet the standards of work expected of the judicial office. Now, the theme was that he actually expressed vehement opposition to the LLB degree being watered down in these terms, so to speak, from the old LLB. point being that he really was very strongly of the opinion that you do need an adequate entry-level qualification for the regional court. That is, that is not an issue that can, in, with an individual-based policy, cannot be made so quickly and slipped into an actor if we are in the country of government.
Ladies and gentlemen, we now open
just a second point I forget to report. There is also a representation made by Mr. Tassin, who is the president of the Southern Divorce Court, Canadian GLB. His representation is largely focuses on what is being targeted to be once this bill has been implemented, etc., and what's going to happen to him at the time. We have always said that the regional court structure are not abolished or phased out. They are being integrated into the regional court structure. And the integration will take into account any existing personnel and their position to make sure that they don't, they're not going to be in a worse position than they will be before the integration. So that is the matter that will be basically dealt with as part of the integration process, etc. I know that the letter has been addressed to the chairperson of the committee, but what is the main authority? Then the integration will not put people at a worse position than they would be. They will be integrated with a state position, and we just have to find a way of finding out how they're going to be managed. There are only two permanent persons in the regional court division. There are the divorce court who are going to be integrated. The others are all extreme and presiding officers, which don't have a problem, etc. So there are quite a number of options available, etc. One, they could be also be given some of the vacancy in the committee. Yeah, but the process must be in consultation with the Massive Commission. So I just wanted to assure the committee that the committee can also take care of that and give us assurance that nobody will be disadvantaged in terms of the current position they hold.
Okay, the open for questions. If you have a
that is
in the answer is by Tima and Mabani.
If it's just on the LLB, I mean, what's the difference between the new LLB and the old B block?
Okay. Let us take the three questions.
I don't think it goes around the positions of the people who are presently serving in the court. It is about the family. The thing was the court are running very smoothly and very well. You know, why do we have to interfere with something which is successful? Why do we have to interfere? One guarantee I've got is you get the same type of service, the same type of accessibility of people, right? And yeah.
Okay.
That was the concern. Also, the reason of the people.
My follow-up is on what the Honorable Johnson said, because if this thing has been coming up for some time, this issue of referring to the new LLP as being inferior than the previous LLP, and one of the reasons that is being raised is that because it's 4 years and the previous LLP was 5 years, then it becomes inferior. You go to most developed countries, the LLP in Britain is 3 years. And there is no reference that is that we can say that that LLP is inferior. Even in most countries in Africa, LLP is 4 years. And to say to also add on what the Honorable Johnson has said, is that they had no problem with the BPRO, which was 4 years. For a very long time, they had no problem with PU reach, which was 3 years. What is a problem with this current LLP? And even in medicine, there are many countries that are not taking the 6-year course, medical course, that are doing a five-year course. Can you say students from those countries, which amongst them include Cambridge University, that because that's the first year medical degree is inferior than a 6-year medical degree.
Okay, those three questions, Department of Justice.
I've got an additional issue. It was on the consultation issue, having read the document now. I mean, look, if I can, from the report, it would be basically that there wasn't any specific direct consultation with JUASA or AMSA. That there was consultation with the magistrate commission, and then there was this conference. I mean, where the point is made that more than half the conference participants were JUASA nominees. You know, which I mean, chairpersons. I mean, like saying, well, you had this meeting, and like 3/4 of the people there were ANC members. We therefore consulted the ANC. Now, we know that's not the case. So it would seem then that there wasn't really any. I think we're looking at the issue from a lessons point of view. And I think quite clearly, with JUASA coming last week and with the meeting you had beforehand, it to me showed the importance of direct organizational consultation. So I think the point really we should be making is, if I'm talking on my views, and maybe the committee can then say if they agree with them or not, is look, I don't think there's any... The Parliament is the body that has to consult. The Department doesn't have to. So we can't prescribe to you what you must do and what you can't do. But it does make everybody's life easier if there is meaningful consultation beforehand. And I think from the report, respectfully, the consultation was not adequate. There should have been consultation with AMSA and JUASA, and hopefully then in terms of lessons learned in future.
JD is volunteering here because we dealt with this thing properly while you were away. Okay. We've covered this ground.
This report?
No, the issues you're raising. We covered this thing. We even felt like we're lecturing them last week and so on. What they are reporting on is the degree or otherwise of consultation before the bill was brought.
Yeah.
That we have covered.
Yeah.
Since then, as you said today, they've learned their lesson.
Sure.
So I think we like, you know, what's the word? Flogging it.
Dead horse.
Is that expression?
Yes.
Correct.
Okay.
So I think to be fair to JD, look, he's got very little hair there. But even that little hair is going to pull out, right? Because the poor fellow has been...
that's fine. I was just going on this report, which I think was tabled today on the
consultation. Independently, so you know what's remarkable, JJ, on another note? You're using words almost that I have nothing to do with what you say. There's a remarkable overlap in the style, tone, and choice of words that you are opting for and I'm opting for. Maybe it's our UDF heritage. Maybe it's the fact that you came to live in a manner of purpose, right? Maybe it's the fact that I've been very influential on the thinking. But, Jamie, I have a concern with that. And you know what, you might think we politicians, you know what they might think? We discussed it in the study group yesterday. And I said, Jamie, you know what, I have really taken them on. Jamie, now you do. No such thing happened. Isn't that right, Jamie? Right. Independently, you're using exactly the same words I use, more or less. And you're saying exactly the same thing. You might put your maybe a safety calling up. I did exactly the same thing.
Okay. I apologize for raising, but it was
responding
to the report.
The point I want to make, interestingly, JJ, is JB's reply to the superb. You know, obviously he's also a politician, right? He's intent from more meeting. So he comes here and he says, look, here's our report. We agree we should have consulted. We've taken it to heart, and you're right, etc., etc. Originally, you know what their line was, JB?
Yeah.
Exactly what you said. They lied while we went to the Magistrates Commission in September. You people know how many people were there. We could start, then they would say, you were not here, obviously. So they would say, no, that was a huge commission.
Mm-hmm.
And in that commission, there was one subcommittee, a commission that met. So I'll cover the ground of a team. Yeah. I'm not covering a ground.
Okay,
but you know what's interesting? Everything you said, I said last.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see, therefore, it's just being... Now, in our report to Parliament, JJ,
mm-hmm.
I'll send you the thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to say that.
Yeah.
That actually we feel... And he says that there's one issue I should raise with you, and this is about difference. I looked at the Constitution, and I did confer with one of your colleagues. According to them, in the InfoCode, I think I said this last week, 80% of the submissions they came to the Department reject 6 months before. When we came to the convention, we didn't think I was sitting in the department, we were 50% of the subject. I then looked at the Constitution, whether there's an obligation on the executive to consult. When you say it's not necessary for the department to consult, that is not the view I got from your colleague. There's clauses in the Constitution that imply John doesn't agree. I didn't even talk about it. So we put it in our report to Parliament that there is an obligation on the executive to consult. Their lawyers agree. Parliament's lawyers agree. John, you're saying there's no obligation on the executive to consult.
I'm not surrender that point.
Look, we can discuss it outside. I mean, the point, the fact is, the Parliament has been taken to court successfully on the basis of insufficient consultation.
Yeah.
I'm not aware of any cases where the executive, which shows also that that's a greyer thing, but to me it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The issue is we want to build as much consensus as possible.
Absolutely.
And it makes Parliament's job easier if the executive has done consultation.
Definitely
going to be an article. So I would suggest that maybe just one, going back on the LLB thing, I mean, my question was a bit facetious, but following on from Bulalani, I mean, the 5 years versus 4 years was because the LLB was tacked on to with a postgraduate degree. I mean, everybody knows this. So you did a BA, BCom, whatever. I did the BA, LLB. I actually don't seem to remember that there was really anything different between the LLB and the BCom. The extra years were because you were doing English and political science and things like that. And I think the reason for the new four-year LLB was to try and give greater equality, whereby before BCom was seen as inferior. The richer people who could afford to go to university for 5 or 6 years then did the undergraduate and the postgraduate, and now everybody does the same. But I think that really, I don't think there was any difference between a BCom and an LLB before.
Okay. Before you start answering your own question,
Sorry.
It was mentioned that Dr. Dalton, you're offered to serve on a committee for the training of district management or organizing the
debates around LLB are the very same reason why we thought there needs to be consultations on them before we put that amendment or removing it, because even if that debate should also involve the academic issue. But there was a special survey that was done by the university that looked at the content, the value of the LLB, etc. And this comes from the fact that previously we had a center of qualification. There were diploma jurists and diploma legum, which were basically intended for lawyers who would not go to practice. Then there was a B jurist, which was also intended for that purpose. Then there was B proc, which was intended those who would want to become attorneys. And over the B proc, you had to pass Latin and African, get LLB, so that you should then be 15 and 17 course, whatever, so there's some area of specialization, etc. But all have been rationalized and integrated into one, etc. Now, without basically sitting alone here, without even having the experts here, I think it would be very unfair to evaluate the value of that LLB and make judgments on it. I think it would be part of a quantitative process. If there are views from the JPs that there are other elements they see, they may be correct because they're dealing with new and incoming people from the profession. Perhaps they may find the people who they are not meeting the demands of the judiciary also. But we thought these are the very same reasons that we thought let go to graduate issues for making that kind of decision. Or before coming back to the committee to say we want it to be removed or want it may be so that may want to be improved or it may want to be enhanced or so, etc. But for now, it remains the bachelor degree for all legal studies. So in focus areas, you can become a lawyer, you can become a master, you can become a judge, you can become a master. And the thinking is that they have collapsed all the basic requirements needed for one to become a competent lawyer or so, etc. So I think when we come, after that kind of an assessment with all the stakeholders and after consultation with all the relevant people, we should be able to come with a clearer position to the committee what our views are on the matter. On the issue of the consultation, remember, we're just responding to your request that we will just provide a narrative explanation what we have done, and I think we have learned lessons. Yes, I did tell the department that the DG, and he agrees with everything that honourable member and the chairperson has said.
And the committee.
In the committee, they said when you deal with policy,
it's not the matter what's about.
Yes, when you deal with issue of policy, it's very helpful for people to engage and basically discuss and give options, etc. So there must be an extra level of consultation. It may not be in all areas, but where there are very contentious policy aspects, they engage with consult around those aspects. That's why when you're looking at big policy issues, government will always issue a green paper, discussion paper before they come with legislation or so. That shows the depth of consultation required, etc. But as I said, it's not in all areas that should be the debate.
Not to flog a dead horse on the thing, but just I think what I was taking issue with was the point you were saying in the report that look at the conference, half the people were Joasta, and using that analogy of saying, look, at a particular gathering, three quarters of the people were ANC. That's not consultation with the ANC. All ANC people here know that. You go through structures or whatever. So that was sort of the only thing.
With you to share the last point on the Southern Divorce Court, I think we've made assurance, even to the people who are here last time. This one, as a department, we don't want best practices to be confined to Cape Town. We want best practices to be confined to all the courses. And so the only way in which we can get experience from the Southern Divorce Court to be sectored in the city and the Hulu the far northwest is to integrate into a system like the regional court. We are not taking away the good work. We are not killing something which has been done. We are integrating it. The people, the work, the programs will continue. But they will be now operating on the same line kind of organization. And I understand that people always, when change comes, they fear that they may basically interfere with the current arrangement. Well, that will be the very minimal disruption. If the interference is towards enhancing efficiency, we can't take the different ways.
Yeah, let's see. I just want to say one or two quick things. One is, as long as not here, my friend, your key position, you are? Hello? Judy, can you tell Lolly that we will meet Magistrate Clark with the letter? He tells JB that he has written to us. So if Lolly hasn't got it, she can kindly ask you to kind of make a decision because I think we should give him a letter and show how it's all members here. And maybe can we ask you to use spoken faith and show us that his position will not be unduly affected?
Yes,
she might have help. It's rather a very personal matter. It seems that, and I must say that the first time I read the letter, that he is a bit at odds with the department about his status, whether he should be regarded as a regional court president or simply as a regional court magistrate. Now, it would appear from his letter that he is presently regarded as a regional court magistrate. That is a result of the 1929 Act that says people appointed to the divorce court are deemed to be regional court magistrates. Now, he's written his approach as independent commissioner on the elimination of public office there, and his approach to magistrate commission because he wants to be regarded as a regional court president. So that is really the issue. I don't think it's really, and all he wants to know is how this will be passed to affect his perceived status, but he seems that he's still in a dispute around his status.
Right, but, just because it's a policy, and, any citizen, has a right to reach us, and we have an obligation to respond. Can I mandate JB, as I'm the chair for this bill, to ring the guy
ring the bank, please. I don't talk about Guy. Yes, he's listening. It's all come. Hey, but Lolly, you are so good. Isn't Lolly good? You just, you know, spoke in your absence and told Judy to tell you. And he's so telepathic now, he's seeing me, that she heard me when she wasn't here and actually didn't see that woman. Okay, so can you manage Judy Stefanioni also to ring him and let him know that I need a good phone. So that's the one issue. The second issue is, in our report of Parliament, we covered the Eugene issue. The third issue is, now we should proceed to attend only to the new issues. We don't need to go to the court, so we can do it soon. The only new issues are the ones that emerge from the meeting with Joanna, and then the department will explain to us. They have briefed us a moment ago that they are feeling that we need a provisional tool in the bubble that allows for clarity on incremental implementation of aspects of this bill, dealing with extending civil jurisdiction on regional courts where they have huge backgrounds in criminal cases. And J.B. Bulalani and I met with them recently, and we thought collectively that that makes sense. So they'll take us to only those provisions, and then procedurally what we've agreed on between J.B. and myself is that we won't vote on the bill today. We will finalize the report, and then if we, next week, depending on the numbers we have, we can vote on it. It makes no difference, because the bill is only going to go to the House towards the end of May, for the first 6 weeks of plenary sitting. So we need to come back on the early part of May, we can vote on it, but it makes no difference. But we are not coming back to this bill now today. So, you know, on the voting matter, we told JB, unless he's got other work, he doesn't have to come back on this bill. We can do better things. You want to send somebody who will help you and vote on the vote. So I think we should just proceed. The only practical question I've got to ask you, I don't know what's going on, but I see Lolly's given us the 6th of March thing. But there is a 10th of March thing that I looked at last night. And the 10th of March thing I looked at is, maybe I'm not sure, I just want to get some clarity, is the one that also comes from Overholt. And I don't know how it ended up with you, by a lot of. So he's used your 10th of March text to edit something to or what, I don't know. So we should all be looking at the same text, not the 6th of March text, the 10th of March text. Which text are you
working on? I think that that one was sent to you as a list of what we would like to discuss with you. But I don't think, I'm not thinking about it as we had started to think too forward for us.
So which text are we looking at today?
The 6th of March.
Oh,
we'll see it regarding the bundle comments.
Okay, what's the difference between the 10th of March and the 6th of March?
The amendments that we would like to raise with you this morning, we've provisionally put in that 10th of March.
Mm-hmm. Should we work on that one then? Because then you've done it and it's reasonably
well. It's available to all members and it's accessible then.
There's only one question I want to raise and find out. I attended a meeting of a conference in fact in UWC with the leader and then Mr. Other meeting papers were there. And they raised one issue today. What is going to happen with the family? Are regional courts going to do everything that relates to family matters? And then they say, we're going to be contravening the, I think it's the association of family. What is that? Yes. Also the convention to say, we're talking about access to. That is for the poor, and the divorce court is a treatable forum which has got access, which can also deal with matters, family matters around the court of convention. So, what would be the correct response to that?
Okay,
so
know, different issues that you understand.
I'm considering the Hague Convention. It does not establish court. It just provides for a service that needs to be provided elsewhere, etc. There are different aspects of the Hague Convention which will be dealt at different court levels. The issues of cross-country adoption aspect, where you still find the High Court in them, the issues of matrimonial property which happen at the High Court, etc. What we'll be doing, and we've said this will be an incremental approach. We, in this bill, we have not taken everything that leads to the Supreme Court, the original court as of now. There are things that will remain with the High Court, there are things that will remain here. And we've indicated that over time, that rules can always be extended by way of resources. Now, and that's the same issue that that you must have raised the other time. This bill does not take away, for example, maintenance costs away from the main political cost, the regional cost. It still keeps it there. The only thing that the regional cost will deal with is the divorce. And that's what's specified in the bill. So it's deal with divorce, or that's nullified expenses. All the other matters will relate in terms of the cost of the jurisdiction in terms of different legislation. And we have said that there will be, because of an incremental approach, over time, we'll look into different pieces of legislation to find out whether we do have capacity to amend and bring those jurisdictions to the regional court at a particular time. But for now, we've provided several jurisdictions, and we've been saying that the jurisdiction, the ceiling in terms of amount will also be incremental. And we've provided divorce matters specifically in terms of not family matters in its entirety. We have specified the matters will be dealt with by the regional court.
My second
one
say I'm blowing my horn, but there was Judge Crystal from the head.
No,
who was part of the conference, and when I was giving my speech, he was nodding some most of the things which I was saying. So I think I was in the correct track. Sometimes the conference here is messed up. It was attended by various law professors, some from abroad, for example, London and New York, as well as Israel. So I only realized it must be true when one delegate said to me, "You must have been trained to come to address this audience." Okay.
No, mine was just on Mr. Clarkson's letter, and I raised it. Okay. Look, I mean, I see what he's asking for. It's not actually to do with the bill. It's to do with his current grading. And what I don't understand is that, I mean, he blames the department, I mean, at the bottom of the letter, the fact that the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development holds a view contrary to above is of no consequence. I mean, the regime for gradings and remuneration is Mosaneke Commission, Commission for Remuneration of Public Representatives recommends. President then implements with the agreement of Parliament. So President usually follows what the Commission has recommended. So I think in responding to his letter, Chair, let's get one, the Mosoneke report for October 2007. Number two, let's get the proclamation which we approved as this committee after that, where we approved the magistrate's salary increases, and let's see what the situation is. I think that is the best. It's not what happens when this bill is passed, it's what's happening to him now. And it's to me straightforward. Maybe we should also get the Commission's recommendations for the previous year too, because he talks about the Commission having graded him this time, and my recollection is the Commission just gave a percentage increase to magistrates. There wasn't any specific grading, but they did set out on an annexure which grade everybody within. But let's deal with it that way, I think, because we are ultimately the ones who are determining salaries and grading more than the department in theory.
Okay.
So
why don't the two of you confer?
The lawyer can help get that documentation. It should be with the committee section.
Okay. So shall we then hear the proposed amendment? Before we do, I would like to welcome a very important person. Bodani Romano is the Secretary of Public Enterprise on Committee. And he has abandoned his committee this morning to come and sit here alone. Which is a show of enormous loyalty to his ex-chairperson. But on the most serious note, he himself is a lawyer by training. And frankly, as I think to him, not sure why he's here, but he's set out to practice law. But anyway, welcome, Bonan. Your committee is not meeting this morning. And finally, may I observe on behalf of the committee how displeasant Maganisha looks this morning, how presidential it looks.
Okay, just on a different note while you are, Mr. Delamo and I were wanting to know the sections in the Constitution that require the executive to consult. I've looked and I presume Mr. Delamo is the same. We couldn't find anything. So can you just give us the sections?
All right. Since he's provoking me, let me tell you my experience of Parliament. I hope there's no journalist. Let me switch it off. You see, the last time I went to Parliament,
is that long ago?
It was 2003. And I asked the Parliament lawyer, can you tell me whether the clause is constitutional or not? So they wrote two full pages, maybe, and they said, yes, it's constitutional. And they set out in two pages why it's constitutional. And then page three starts, no, it's not constitutional. And they set out two pages why it's not constitutional. And this, JB, is 6 weeks of persistent situation. So I abandoned it. Now, Mr. Manara is here. You serve the state law advisor, not the parliament. You serve parliament. Yeah. And I think it's my friend, we will not be getting that sort of service if you were around. Now, can we also inform this committee officially that Mr. Manara is here with us full time? He's very pleased about it. I don't think he's going to be pleased when he sees this week what time we're going to finish our meeting. But welcome. Let me hand over to JB, and we must finish this thing really. I agree that it's I who am holding back everything, and that's one of the privileges of being the semi-permanent chair of this committee.
Maybe in the same breath, Secretary, let us also welcome Jimmy-san, who is the new legislator.
Jimmy-san. Yeah, he's been welcome last week, but it's fine. Welcome him again.
Okay. Let us get a report, Mr. Delange, about the proposed amendment.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think before we get there, Chair, the last time you looked at JRC 19, this is the document you worked on the last time, I skipped off everything as the committee went through the bill, Chair, save for, and if I was accurate, there were two areas where we needed improvement. The first was something that the chairperson number one picked up. It was on page 9 of that document. And it only required the insertion of the words or regional division in section 29.1b. That has now been done, and reported that here. And the second one was right at the end. Picked up that there was a cross-reference that needed to be changed with the very last clause on page 13, as inserted by section 1 of this Act, should be changed to section 2 of this Act. That has also been changed. So those two amendments were affected here, and then we can go straight to this document, the first draft of 6 March 2008. This document contains all the amendments that were reflected or that were reflected in the previous document. This would be the A list, the formal list of amendments to the book. Now, with regard to the new numerous issues the department would like to raise with the committee. Just very briefly, Chair, I think we've discussed this time and again, that what is very important with regard to this legislation is to adopt an incremental approach with regard to implementation. It is a fact that the courts that we are, well, that this legislation intends to give civil jurisdiction are seized with heavy backlogs of criminal work. And the concern was expressed by various interested parties and also by various members of the committee that would it be not shooting yourself in the foot by extending the jurisdiction of these already overburdened courts by giving them added work. And the answer to that has always been that it will not be legislation that will within 24 hours change the whole situation in the regional court, but that as the capacity is developed on an incremental basis, not even countrywide necessarily, but you can go region by region or location by location, and then implement the provisions of the bill as you develop sufficient capacity. Now, the proposals that we're referring to really relates to tying up this incremental approach even some more. And specifically, by making provision members, you may recall that in terms of the existing provisions of the Act, the Minister, Section 2 of the Principal Act, is concerned that we are amending in Clause 2 of the Bill. It relates to the Minister's powers of the district, regional divisions, and courts. And the proposal is firstly that where 2.1, Section 2.1.I, currently provides that the Minister may appoint one or more places in each regional division for the holding of a court for such regional division. That we specify this by saying that the Minister may appoint one or more places in each regional division for the holding of a court for the adjudication of offences contemplated in 1892. In other words, for the holding of a criminal court in the regional division. And that we then add a sub-paragraph saying that the Minister may appoint one or more places within each regional division for the holding of a court for the adjudication of civil disputes contemplated in, and then we break it up by saying Section 29.1, which would be your ordinary civil matters, Section 29.1b, which would be your divorce court matters, or a combination of Section 29.1 and 29.1b. And we go further and say that the Minister can then prescribe the local limits within which such courts shall have jurisdiction, and may include within those limits any portion of an adjoining regional division. Now, the effect of an amendment such as this would be that even though a regional court would theoretically have jurisdiction, civil jurisdiction, that jurisdiction can in practice only be exercised and become a reality once the Minister has, by notice in the Gazette, announced a place where that regional court may sit for the purpose of civil cases. And there's further flexibility in that the Minister will have an option to say that the civil regional court will sit in that place and only deal with civil matters or only deal with divorce matters, which would relate to our present divorce courts, which are already being integrated into the system. Or then if you have sufficient capacity that the regional court sitting in that place can deal with both ordinary civil matters and with divorce civil matters. Now, it's a fairly small amendment being proposed, and the add-on effect of that would be that you would need to put in a cross-reference, and the cross-reference we have in mind would be in Clause 7 of the Bill, the amendment to Section 29 of the Principal Act, and I'm referring to the bill makes provision currently for 7.1 capital B, that is the divorce cases and the divorce jurisdiction. Then we're proposing that we add a 7.1 capital C. All that provision would say is that jurisdiction conferred on a court for a regional division in terms of this section shall be subject to a notice having been issued under Section 2.1 I, capital A, with respect of the place for the holding and the extent of the civil adjudication of such form. This may appear to be a bit of overkill, but it is really just a safety mechanism to make it absolutely clear that even though the jurisdiction is extended, it can only be exercised if a place has been designated where the court can sit, and it can also be limited as to whether it's ordinary civil cases or divorce cases or both civil and divorce cases. And this is on page 12, in the next last issue where we deal with exactly the same thing, is in the transitional provisions, which we're proposing just to add that with, as far as the current divorce courts are concerned, we're already making provision in the transitional arrangement that those courts will continue to function, but they will be merged with the existing regional divisions, depending on the regional division that the minister assigned them to. And we just thought it would be complete just to add a C to say that the places, places of sitting of those divorce courts, the existing court, but we deem to have been designated in terms of the notice contemplated in section 01A, capital A. I hope I'm not confused.
Okay, then to any questions?
Ima, you want to say
something in that, Ima? You want to comment?
Can I read something? Look, basically, I think this is more consistent than the amendment, as we spoke a moment before we started this meeting, with what it is that the committee feels that we should do it implementing. So I think as far as the new amendments they're bringing up, we will take it to the study group on Tuesday, Wednesday. Basically what they say, from summarize it for a layperson like me, right? You are saying, yes, we must extend civil jurisdiction to regional courts, which until now are focused wholly on criminal cases. But you recognize that criminal courts, I mean regional courts, restricted as they are to criminal cases, are finding it difficult to cope with the load. Therefore, to heap on them the major responsibility to do civil cases must take into account their capacity constraints. And the way you are seeking to now do it is to insert in the bill provisions that A, say that the minister will incrementally extend civil jurisdiction to regional courts by A, dividing civil cases into divorce cases only, and other civil cases. And where a regional court is able to cope with its current criminal caseload, it will be allowed to do both divorce cases and other civil cases. Where it's not able to do enough of its criminal work, but is managing a bit, you will allow them maybe to do only divorce cases or only civil cases. And where you think they know we're ready for it, you will allow them to do neither until you convince they really to do one and later both sorts of civil matters. Is that correct?
I think that is correct. Okay.
It's correct with an addition. This incremental amount is based on the commitment that for those areas that will be unfair by notice in the government, there will be additional capacity that will be created. So there will be new courts.
Yeah, no, yes. We understand all of that. You've covered
that. Right.
Yes, you know? Yeah. Yes, thank you. I understand.
You understand?
Yeah, but there's one more
question. You have no lawyers in the committee.
There's one question. Are we really not in taking action to do that? We do it like that. I mean, the demand of this. The reality is which we are now conflicting and mutating access.
Can I
Malaysia is the incremental approach. It works the same way that we've done the equality courts. One was saying within every regional division or within every same housing, there will be certain courts that will start dealing with equality courts. Now, if we come this one, we'll basically say we are creating 53 positions which will be spread throughout the county. So, for those areas where in housing, Western Cape, we are going to appoint 7 or 9 people, new people. Those will be dismissed for civil matters already. But over a long time, those 7 areas will be extended to cover the whole 29 areas. Say there are 29 regional court center districts in Western Cape. What we'll start by saying first time is that we'll say civil matters and divorce matters in Western Cape can be dealt with in 14 cases in their courts instead of 29. And we create capacity for the 14 courts immediately with the implementation. While the other people are also going through training programs and stuff, so that as and when they get equipped to do the matter, and as and when we add additional capacity, the 14 areas can gradually increase to 21 until we meet the 29. So what we are saying is that not that everybody won't have access. It's only that it means that we'll have access within the demarcated 40, which will increase to other areas over time.
Right, any further questions or comments?
Yeah. Chair, with your permission, I will see to it that even today we'll give the Secretary a written writing so that we can look at it and see it in front of you. It's much easier.
Okay, in that case, can we then agree that in principle, what you are saying sounds fine? We then look at the wording and see, I don't know if this is a tool, but some technical support is being very easily fine. We look at another and I will be, just check the SPT order, with JB. And the two of us meet with another and that will be great. So we'll be back, we'll get back on Tuesday afternoon. Look, we'll sort that outside this meeting. So can we thank JB for all the work he's done? And I also know he got a very positive response. He participated in on our behalf at the workshop last week. So thank him. What we must do, Comrade Friends, is that wherever a member of this committee represents us anyway, they must report back to the committee. So we will find a fuller meeting, a more appropriate meeting where you can report back. Not just, I don't know how long we sat in on that workshop, on the conference. You can just give us a sort of like 10 minute info. Okay. We've also said those of you who go to the Magistrates Commission, like Lawrence Garcia, Elport Garcia, they must also report to us. Okay, then let's move on to the next issue, which is the Child Justice Bill. That's it. That magistrate's matter is outstanding, and that's it. We need to just vote on that, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, well, people are caught up on the N1, as you know. So when people roll in, that's fine, we can deal with that sometimes during the day. We're sitting to a 5:30 today or 6 today. So shall we actually start by explaining firstly that JJ has to be away, one of the co-chairs. He will be back after 12. Carol is still stuck on the N1. So those of you who rolled in from outside, Anne and others, the N1 has come to a complete standstill this morning. I have asked Cape Town people to write apologies to us who are not Cape Town based, because I left Cape Town Park at 7:00 to have an 8:00 breakfast meeting with somebody who was here from Joburg, and I got to Parliament at 10:50, 3 hours and 5 minutes. So my 2.5 hours between Imam, Johan Dilanga, Christine, and Steve Swartz, I want my time back. But now are you Cape Town and bread? Okay, the four of you are on my 2.5 hours back. Yeah, but I can't do my own. Well, it's a DA list today. But, of course, I really think it's outrageous. One truck, brings the whole city to a stop. All right, now, all the issues Jackie and Daksha have done, where is Long Island?
Jackie, I sent him an SMS about 5 minutes ago. I should all be on the way too. And just if it makes you feel better, Chair, I took about 1 hour and 20 minutes to drive exactly the same route. That's some local knowledge coming in very useful.
Yeah,
our intention is to do the N1.
I know, of course, I avoided the N1. I was on the N1, but then I took an alternative relationship, which I will not disclose to you.
Alright, so let's deal with process issues. You see, I don't know why the department does this. We're wasting time. Why, like last week? What's the problem? Why are we not here on time? So now we have to wait here.
I'm sorry, Chair. I undertook to send them an SMS when it appeared to me that day.
Look, I'm not going to cover the ground again. I'll speak to the lawyers outside the meeting. But the document we're now going to use is CJB 36. Okay, this is the one that comes from the NGOs and civil society. Because what it does is it puts into the department's document other submissions they made, which they feel the committee should consider. The fact that they are doesn't mean they agree with them. Thank you all. Thank you, JB. Thank you, Yohan. Thank you, everybody. They have added things on, and so the document is quite much longer now. It's gone from 40 pages to 52. Fine. Okay. No problem. Secondly, I need to clarify that, where the committee is at this stage. In exchange with a journalist from one of the newspapers, Cape Times, I gathered that there's some misunderstanding about the process of finalizing this bill. So let me make something clear. One is we will sit today till 6 o'clock or so, as agreed. Carol will chair the afternoon session and I'll chair the morning session. The committee, the majority party at least, has merely said that in the first phase of considering the bill conceptually and in terms of policy, our tentative views are the following, if I recall, that we think that if the Department of Social Development and other actors can provide the necessary evidence, we think serious consideration should be given to assessment for all children. And if the department disagrees with us, the onus is on the department to provide the evidence. So that's all we say. It's very conditional. We are very cautious about what they tell us by the Department of Social Development. Not because we're testing the integrity of the one individual concerned, but because we've grown older now, 40 years older, and we know that on most occasions the department say they can do things, they can't. So that's the first thing we've agreed on. So I really think the NGOs will understand it's a conditional direction we are taking. We haven't agreed to anything. We will listen to what the department says. And for that reason, we are suggesting that next Thursday, we should, for the whole day, focus on capacity. We would like the SACS to be here, the Department of Social Development to be here. You can be taking notes, Lawrence, in your absence, but she will tell you what we said. And so on. So next Thursday, we must look at capacity. We also feel that if we went to them, if the department is unable to convince us that there isn't capacity, then we get to agree to preliminary inquiry, okay? And at this stage, the ones I've chosen very carefully are all the civil society actors that are listening. At this stage, this is our view, our tentative, at this stage, comma, tentatively, comma, it is our view that there should be preliminary inquiry for all. Provided, again, that there are not undue pressures put on the capacity of the state. Again, it's very provisional. Thirdly, Carol's not here. She can summarize it better than I can. Thirdly, we agree that at this stage, taking further engagement within our party political structure and engagement with the department, at this stage, our tentative view is that all children should be considered for diversion. But we are clear certain categories of offences and or age of the child will preclude the child being diverted. We at this stage feel that one option is to provide for prosecutorial guidelines to determine that and leave that to the NCA. The other view, and both views I heard by the majority parties during our discussions yesterday in our study group, that to the extent we decide that prosecutorial guidelines will determine that, we might want to think of another option, which is done in a constitutionally tenable way, a consultative way with the NPA and other stakeholders, that sets out that the prosecutorial guidelines the law, the bill should actually provide conditions in which whatever the prosecutors decide, that there are certain categories of offences around issues of murder, rape, robbery, that must be precluded from diversion. So it's like allowing the prosecutors to decide, but limiting the latitude they have. I'm fumbling a bit because I thought Cameron was going to be here and she would summarize. She did not want to sit in such a way. But J.B. Imam, is that not more or less what we arrived at? We also feel the issue of minimum age for criminal capacity, we're not in a position to do that.
Yeah, we said, he's right. We said that the option B under prosecutorial guidelines option is to say that murder or rape or whatever offences we decide on that are of very serious nature, they should be excluded from diversion unless, in my place to say, exceptional circumstances dictate otherwise. So the onus would be the norm would be to say no to diversion, but in terms of prosecutorial guidelines, except if there are exceptional circumstances. The other thing we decided yesterday is that at this stage we're not in a position to come to a conclusion on minimum age for criminal responsibility. Though we are teetering towards that in Uganda, which has got a history of children being used in armed conflict and so on. In Mozambique, which is our neighbor, which is in a less capacity state than us, can go for 12. We must give it serious consideration, but we need to balance out what else we are doing in the bill and have a package settled in finally, which is organized around two principles. One, and I'm really missing care of it, I'm sure it's got much cleaner than I can. Although I'm not sympathetic with Carol because she's Cape Town born and bred, and so she can sue N1 for all I care. Well, I do care, actually. I wish she'd just come here and go back to the N1 and stay there until the last person who's not Cape Town based is released from the seat on the N1. But maybe when Carol comes in the afternoon, I have to touch the people. She does it much nicer than I do, much clearer. But the other thing is that we feel that these issues will pivot around two things. One, the capacity of the state at the moment and its potential capacity. So in other words, even if we feel the state can't do it now, some aspect, or we need to phase it in, can we say, let's take a crude thing. Can I just say something out of the top of my head from it? There are no friends here, meaning in the committee. Dr. Delport, for those of you who came in late, is in Johannesburg, Pretoria, Swami, I think. Dr. Minister Jobbert is in hospital, and he should go out with it. T-Swat is also caught up. Again, I don't know him, but he's Cape Town. Yeah, okay. He's in the N1, so I don't care about him. He will be here when he's relieved of the pressures of the traffic congestion. Now, let's say we agree on assessment for all of us. Oh, she's not coming today.
Yes,
which is a great pity, really. But I understand. Great with you, because the policy person often we have to deal with and the lawyers. You're the same, the only department I know that you deal with is lawyers. And the primary interaction. There's no other committee I know. You deal with policy people, lawyers sit there, and they just effect what the committee and the policy people decide. But it's interesting, I'm going to confuse this. I'm very challenged.
It's a welcome change, I want you to just add, because we have, and it makes it easier for us as well, the lawyers.
Why is this department different from any other department? It's one government. I don't know what you're up to, really. Let's discuss it out. Every other department we deal with policy people. The lawyers simply sit there and they craft what we agree to in interaction between civil society, parliament, and the executive. The lawyers in the Ferris Corvia and Petra would only intervene in the 6 years I stayed there. And they were very helpful. Very helpful, let me tell you. Excellent people. I really respect them. They would intervene and say, no, what you're trying to do is unconstitutional. Or what you're seeking to do is better addressed in clause 14.1a. Oh, no, no, the chairperson is just not on. Let's rephrase it like this. And great. That's the role they play. So, you know, in another committee, I would have said, no, then let's not meet. What's the relevance with due respect to your lawyer's review without the policy person? But, hey, look, you know, there's an election looming, and I don't know where I'll be, and so on. If it was longer, I would have insisted that that's the way we operate. It's Parliament, and what this committee did before is something it must answer for itself. I can't answer for it. I have to abide by the norms and conventions of Parliament, not the history of this committee. Okay, so let's come back to this point that Shireen can't make it, but she's assured me she'll be here next week. Because if she's not here next week, let's call it off. Because next week we really must finish this problem. Okay, so let's come back to where we are. We are saying, Lauren, that all of these things are tentative, right? But this is where we are. We are saying, secondly, that we need to balance the, say we agree on assessment for all, but we may want to put provisions in the BILMA that say we phase it in, assessment for all, as capacity of the state grows. Very interestingly, we just a moment ago, Lauren, looked at the civil jurisdiction of legal courts, and they found a very nice way of saying you can't just heap the civil responsibility of legal courts without phasing it in, and even separating divorce cases and others. It's very clever. You can do it. The resistance may be intellectual and political, but we are saying to you, already begin to think. You're not going to win this debate, I think, at this stage. You're not going to win this debate of assessment only for all, unless you really come with strong arguments, and unless your federal department crumbles next week. So you can start thinking about phasing something in, you know, rather than saying we do it now. And the municipal systems will be the same, but we can discuss it after. The second principle around which we will finally come to a package arrangement, where we might have a trade-off and say, okay, because of state capacity. The second area where we will deal is the balancing the needs and interests of the rights of the child with the needs and interests of the community as a whole and the victims of the victim, right? So around those two themes, we will come to some agreement. Our own study group yesterday, to inform you, is a bit more cautious about the state's capacity. Let's say yesterday, February last week, we remain convinced that the Department of Social Development must provide the evidence to us. And where the NGOs feel strongly, then they must come with the evidence too. Maybe they've got evidence. You see, for example, I asked, interesting, Christine said the same thing independently. What exactly is an assessment? What exactly happens? We would like to know. How long does it take to do an assessment? Even if they can do more assessments, is the Department of Social Development here? What is the quality of what will emerge? They are saying to us, we can do the numbers. We are doing it at the moment. The issue is, what is the quality of the assessment and so on. So we will have to spend a lot of time around that. We will also, I think, want to visit. I don't know whether it's possible, Lauren, whether we can observe some class prison or what. You know, like if you watch Law and Order, you know, you see Bristol, you know what's Law and Order. You look through that class or something, because it can't be intrusive. Maybe it's not allowed, I don't know. But is there somewhere we can observe an assessment? can we visit one of the one stop justices to see how it's working? Because I don't have a feel for these issues, but maybe it's because I'm new to justice. But other members are also interested in me telling me they don't have a sense of these things. So we need to know all of those things before we come to any final conclusion. So I'm just alerting people. We're going in a certain direction. But, you know, it's all pivots around capacity and around balancing the child's rights with the needs of the also.
Just on your assessment, I mentioned it previously, but I think I'll mention it again, is what this bill also places additional responsibilities on probation officers, quite a few, in terms of going to find out where the place is available, and maybe probation officers are doing that in the course of their business, but now we're putting it into law and asking them to get sworn affidavits. These are all extra things that are going to take extra time that need to be taken into consideration as well, because it's additional work if they're not doing it already.
And can I also suggest, I also think we should know, I've now read about close to 85% of the submissions. One of them I'm refusing to read, if you can summarize it if you want to. It's a very thick one that came from a professor about legal representation. I'm not going to read that. I just don't have the energy of time, and somebody will read it and summarize it. But I've read most of it, and I'm getting clearer and clearer now. And by next Thursday, I shall be reasonably clear and able to assist my co-chair to chart a way forward. So, I also would like to know from the department, Lawrence, so this new Child Care Act, what is it called? Children's Act.
Children's Act.
Now, it places a bigger burden on probation officers. And there's another matter also about the quality of the assessment and how much value people bring if it's not done properly to the court process. So this is a further for preliminary inquiry and so on, you know. But, you know, I am going to start to meet with Christine and others tomorrow to organize my thoughts, and I will organize, if I can, with Christine's help, by next Tuesday, a set of questions that we would like the Thursday session to deal with. Maybe Christine stopped thinking of that already. And what we could do is send it to you by this Tuesday afternoon, so that the SAPS, the Department of Social Development, all the stakeholders on Thursday who are going to implement this will come here. And we have the NGOs participate fully as well. So that's not a very good summary. I'm afraid I'm fumbling a bit. But that's where we are at the moment from the majority party side. We've taken no final decision. Now, do the NGOs want to respond, Jackie, to what I'm saying? Do we understand each other? Do you want any clarity?
Sorry, yes, Chair. Thank you very much. We always understood that the decisions that you took last week were tentative, and we obviously are very encouraged by the approach that the committee is adopting. But we do realize that they're certainly not final decisions. Just on one issue, if I can perhaps just comment in relation to the Children's Act, and I'm sure Anne would like to say something too, is that probation officers do not have any scope for any duties or responsibilities under the Children's Act. It's social workers. And yes, there is some concern about the capacity of the Department of Social Development to deliver on certain things under the Children's Act. There's been a major costing. But the point is that probation officers are separate. They will not have any responsibilities. And, in fact, probation is a separate unit within the Department of Social Development that has its own budget, that has its own implementation plan. So, if Anne wants to add.
Yeah, you
want to
add anything?
I think the issue is really that the probation officers are social workers. So every probation officer will have a social work degree. But they're already in positions designating them as probation officers. Now, in cities, you would be a probation officer and you would do nothing else. But there are places in rural areas where a social worker might do some probation work functions and other children's court matters and that sort of thing. So the issues might be more of concern in the rural areas, but as we know, most crime is committed by children in the urban areas.
Yeah.
So that's the distinction. So the other important thing to remember about the Children's Act is that it does provide for secure care facilities, which that's another link with the child justice bill. But there you'll find, I hope the departments will come and explain this on Thursday, that they have got plans to build, which are well underway, the building's already commenced in some provinces, additional secure care facilities in several of the provinces. And anyway, as we've seen already from some of the statistics, the current secure care facilities are not running.
Oh, very, very surprised.
That might simply be because magistrates at the moment don't have to send children to secure care facilities. They perhaps are ignoring it as an option. The child justice law will obviously direct them much more to use those alternative facilities.
Can I ask another first question, Lawrence? I mean, you know, I think we must mull over. We will give the NGO the slot as well, so when those people speak, we will participate fully. And then by next Thursday, it's not quite a world for you, because we come back in August and look line by line. If you want to say to people, well, it's really like Anne is going from Norway and so on, I don't well expect you to decide. But we would really like you to be here next week, Anne. Let me just tell you the process, Lawrence. We are suggesting next Wednesday. It's funny not, you're not going to be bumping to us, you're not going to remind me. Let's not have the DG come and give his quarterly report this week. I thought about it. Let's just focus on the child justice group. The study group feels we must get this behind us, because we're very worried when we come back, we have to work on the traditional court bill, which has an we have an obligation to end that before the end of June. And we have the DSO bills, and we have the budget, and we have the oversight report, we have the Human Rights Commission and all the commissions. We're worried because we are exiting ourselves. The issues we've raised, you know, that we have to speak. So we will come back to this bill in August and finish it. But one thing is clear, unless the skies fall down, we are going to finish this bill in August. If you have to sit till 1 in the morning every day, that's fine, we'll do it. And we don't need the full committee. Once the policies are sorted out, the subcommittee can meet. And we can actually only get some of the parliament. We three or four of us, party party, two or three people, they just want to come in. They want to, I don't see what's wrong with it, but you know what, that's fine. But we finish it quickly. Now, as for next week, Wednesday, we start at 10. And I think we sit through as late as we have to. You will organize transport. We have asked members not to come who are caught up in constituents. It will be a small committee. On the NC side, we have given permission for half the members not to come. Only half of us will be here. Regrettably, JJ won't be. But Carol will be here. So next week, can you organize transport for people? I would say we sit till 10 p.m. on Wednesday. And then Thursday, it's a jazz festival on Friday, right? So many of us will be on Thursday anyway. So, but I don't want us to sit here late on Thursday. 5 o'clock we can finish. Okay? That's the latest, if all goes well. But we must finish phase one of the film, which is A, having got clarity on all the conceptual issues, and even some clarity on what our tentative positions are on all the positions. B, having been briefed line by line on every clause right up to the last schedule, and having considered both, let's call it the, can we call it the JD, Jackie Dabsha document, the JD and the D is the Department of Response. So now what we're going to do is we will look at what the JD says on each clause, and then look at what the D says, the Department's reply. So there's two sets of tables here, because you've given us your replies, that's right? We look at both. That must have been phase two. And we'll do that as, remember, this is phase one, so we may come back to the JD and say yes to something we said no to in phase two in August, or the reverse, right? And the same would apply to the D. Okay? So, any issues of clarity around process? So, we have to be here from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Wednesday, and 10 a.m. till about 5 p.m. on Thursday. Wednesday, we will try to please as much as we can of the bill, so that we'll be focusing mainly on issues of capacity and surgery. Ask that. Will you ensure, Lawrence, that they're all here? Department of Social Development, SAPS, who else is relevant? NPA. Is NPA yesterday?
Yes.
Who are you? You'll be here next week?
Yes.
Education, yeah. Sorry? Yeah, DCA.
I went through Shireen because she's got the contacts of all.
And we have to have them all, yeah. And if you have problems, I will speak to the ministers. Okay, so in 24 hours from now, you can come back to me, I'll speak directly to the ministers and say what the problem is. We need them here, or their teachers. They have to come. And can they bring relatively senior people who can be held to account? You know what I'm trying to say, Lawrence? Now, you don't look for somebody who agrees with your view on the subject and roll them in yet speak on behalf of another department. Okay, Lauren? And I won't phone them and look for somebody who agrees with my view and roll them in yet. We're not going to manipulate. And this is going to hold the process up. No manipulation. The senior most person responsible for assessment will have to be here. They can bring whoever else they want. The senior most person from the SAPS who's relevant will come. We will not find people who we think agree either with the department or with parliament, or in this case with civil. And civil society won't intrude either. They won't phone their friends and tell them to come down. You know, nobody's going to interfere. So we're going to do it so that we get the most objective, reasonably objective account of what capacity issues have to be dealt with out there. Okay. On the issues of participation of NGOs, you can come next Wednesday and Thursday. And then you can decide what you do after that. But we will always confirm with you. If you want, Lonnie will every day send you an email. So you can send us your email stuff. Okay. All right. Where are we then?
On a matter of clarity, you said you'd like to organize visits to...
Yeah, we want to do that.
Do you have any idea so that I can make those arrangements?
No, I'll talk to you outside the meeting because members are dreading the next quarter and we're really waiting on the certification of your bill. Lorette, do you handle all that? Who handles that? Your traditional court bill. We really need it quite urgently so we can advertise the public hearing. And then we have to go through both houses.
That's right.
Can I just put some clarity, Lorette? That bill, for 30 days, the National House of Traditional Leaders has got the right to come inside within 30 days. But in the meanwhile, we can go ahead and advertise the public again. We don't wait for 30 days.
And I think the committee can also start deliberating in that 30-day period. It's just that you can't vote on the bill until you've got their comments until that 30-day period is expired.
I also gather the DSO bills have not gone to cabinet this morning, Lorette, or not. So you're not going to meet the end of March deadline. Yeah, so that's worrying. But those are incredible. And members have suggested to me that they are not keen to use this constituency period to come to Parliament or to do any parliamentary work. So I was thinking the last few days of April, shortly before we come here when Parliament reconvenes, we go and visit the Child Justice Centre and we get some feel for what assessments are and so on. But I don't think that's going to work out. So we'll have to find a slot, Lawrence, in early July maybe, or late June. Late June, after we finish the program. It may be better that it actually comes as close to the August sitting as possible, because then, you know, there's not a big gap. Maybe we actually should think of end of July. If the NGOs want to join us, I'm sure we can facilitate it. You know, if they want to come, one of them wants to come, that's fine. Okay, shall we talk about that outside the meeting? Are we clear what we tweet? Okay. Right, Ben, what else? Let's deal with the building. Now, Carol was going to be here. I'm not sure where we left off, but she was chairing last. And now we're going to accommodate our friends. Have you got the 008 CJB 36? Have you seen this, long?
I haven't seen it.
No, it's 20 pages long, but it's fine.
Chair, you mentioned it's a Jackie Duxable document. I'm not too sure if that is the
yeah.
one.
What we've done, remember, we said you would do a summary, and then our research is over and so on, and the other. We said we don't have capacity, so will the NGOs do what I normally do and or a researcher? Go through it and check. I've picked up quite a few things left out. I don't think there's any agenda. It's genuinely, you know, because I couldn't make any sense of why you would need certain things out. It's probably abused. I discovered quite a few, and I will look at this document. I don't know when. This is the weekend, not now. Next week sometime. I will look at this thing and also fit in anything that I can do that as we go through. But this is now the document we're going to look at. And then there's your document, which is, what number is that? I've got a version that's, the response is written, departmental response. It's not numbered, but it's indexed as a word. It says department's response to comments on the bill. Okay, so we'll use these two tables. And again, close by close with the bill. So we need three documents before us, the bill and these two documents. The JD and the D. The JD is the 62 pages, and the department's comment report is 33 pages. Okay. Now, very quickly, Lawrence, we we've gone through the certain clauses, but I see you now give us your response. Now, on your document assessment, do you want to add anything to more? Is anything in this written text, which I haven't had a chance to read, and others haven't done, is anything on the written text, on assessment that you want to add? Is there anything in the written text that you left out when you were responding last week to the injuries on assessment?
No.
So the same would apply to everything so far. We just need to read it to get a firmer grasp, right? On preliminary inquiries, you said the things that I hear and so on. So then let's go to which clause did we round off on?
We stopped on clause 10, so we need to go to.
All right, so let's go to clause 10, and then on the JG we go to page. They're on page 21 of the JG, and on the D, which is page 10. Okay, so now we're on clause 10.
Okay, we actually finished clause 10.
Right, so we had the clause 11. Okay. Roberto of Matthew, okay? Right. Can you take us through what the clause is saying?
See, when I gave my briefing, I said that clause 11 was a very important clause. It's sort of the crux of the bill in the sense that it sets out the streams in which children must be channeled in terms of the bill. And the heading is enlightening. It says, referral of matters, manner in which children are alleged to have committed offences are to be dealt with by virtue of age of child or offence committed. A short clause, but as I say, it's an important clause. There are five streams. Clause 11 says, in each case where a child is alleged to have committed an offence, such child must be dealt with in one of the five following ways. If the child is below 10 years, that's criminal capacity, or a child referred to in section 9(1)(c)(2) is accused of committing an offence, that child has no criminal capacity and must be dealt with in terms of clause 7. That's where the matter is referred to a probation officer. The child has no criminal capacity. The second stream is if a child is accused of committing an offence referred to in Schedule 1, then the matter can go directly to the prosecutor for consideration of diversion, and the matter doesn't have to go to preliminary inquiry. The third stream is if the child has committed a Schedule 1 offence, but the matter is not diverted by the prosecutor, or if the child has committed a Schedule 2 offence, or an offence in Part 2 of Schedule 3, excluding three sexual offences, then the matter must be referred to preliminary inquiry for consideration of diversion in terms of Chapter 7. Chapter 7 deals with preliminary inquiry and diversion. The fourth category or stream is if, and that's the extended definition of child, it deals with the with persons who are 18 years old but under 21 years, and if they have committed a Schedule 1 or 2 offence, then the matter must be referred to the prosecutor for consideration of diversion. And then the last one, the last stream is if a child has committed the most serious offences, those are part 1 of Schedule 3, or items 2, 5, or 6 of Part 2 of Schedule 3, or where the matter is not diverted in terms of Chapter 6 or 7, perhaps the child pleads not specific, he's not going to plead guilty, for instance, then those serious matters, or where the matter hasn't been diverted for some reason or other, they proceed to trial in terms of Chapter 8, that's in the Child Justice Court. So that, in essence, sets out the five streams in terms of which children must be dealt with in the book.
Basically, it's like a pivot around the
almost
evolved.
That's correct.
This is a fundamental.
This is a fundamental. And yet, you know, I realize that this is all subject to change.
Well, you've explained to us what's there, so we have a good understanding of what's there. And you have now distributed to all members the PMG minutes. I think there's quite a lot. We're getting a new research on Monday.
Is it?
What is it?
Did you minister, the PMG minister, we go to the...
Yeah, we distributed it. So I actually think that the argument for why the committee did what it did in 2000 was stronger, it seems to emerge in this committee meeting. And really, it's not your responsibility, it's the committee members who were here then. But they also are human, and they've forgotten why they decided. Which is not to say they mustn't change their view, but simply want to know why. Why did they do that? For example, the thing that challenges me a lot is this study group by the age of 6. We don't even know how to respond to it. It seems almost as if the bill is more punitive to children than to adults. You see, like, I only discovered this last week with JJ's intervention, that at the moment, diversion is allowed for adults. There's no restriction on it. Now, this bill will affect schools. I saw it in the NGOs, but I'm a bit cautious of NGOs. In fact, I'm cautious of you. This is my job. I'm also cautious of the exhibition. So I thought they're spinning, you know? They're giving an inflection to things. So when I first read it, I didn't believe it. But now I'm convinced that actually, that's not even said it could be unconstitutional. That you treat a child more punitively than an adult. So why would the committee and all the department want to do that? Why would you want to restrict diversion for children when in the current criminal justice system in our country, you're not doing that for adults? And B, would it not be grounds for somebody to challenge you on constitutional criteria?
Yeah, I did respond to that. There was a similar question last week. This is the first bit of legislation where we are trying to regulate where diversion is being regulated. There's no statutory provisions or statutory framework to regulate diversion at the moment. And as I had to concede last week, I'll do the same here. That, we are on thin ice as far as that's concerned. That there is no, we're regulating for children, and adults can still be dealt with in terms of the mechanisms that are in place at the moment, and those are not.
Which is called the Google guidelines.
That's right, yes.
Where you provide no restriction on the latitude.
That's right. So this is the first time that we actually.
Is it the intention of the department to also apply these sort of restrictions for adults, and this is phase one of the process? So we can see the
well, I must be quite honest, it's never been discussed in that light. But I think if we want to be safe, then we've got to do something about adults as well. But it just hasn't come into the equation. And I agree with the sentiments that have been expressed here, that we would be treading on thin ice if we treat children restrictively and we don't do it.
So why do you do this?
Could
you yourself say something like, why are you... Why are you allowed for this to happen? Can you go for those actors?
I can't have an answer for that.
Good. On this matter of the city children away from the head of
them. Look, are we really comparing, you know, apples to apples? As far as the guidelines, the NK guidelines are concerned, that is for the criminal justice. Here we're creating a different model, different regime for children. So we really can't compare the two.
So I don't see where the constitutional answer comes from.
It's a different regime we're creating for children, specifically, especially taking into consideration the best interest of the child.
Yeah, but what you're saying really important to you. That we shouldn't be doing. That was very interesting. You're not quite right. You see, we must be very clear here in this committee. We are not lawyers. We will hold the process up on the property rates until we held it up. We said we're not valuing. If the department cannot explain in a way that is understood by the average member of the committee, we're not taking it. In other parliaments in the world, they have 10 researchers and, you know, 15 secretaries and so on. You know? So, let me see if I can understand this issue correctly, right? And then you correct the law. Mom, actually what you're saying reinforces the case of the study group that you can't treat adults acceptance in children. Because when we're dealing with diversion, we're taking children away from the criminal justice system, which you support, right? We support the DSPR community. Now, here, what we are saying is that if children commit certain crimes, they are excluded from diversion. So they will have to go into the criminal justice system. Yet for adults, sorry, no, not special kind, they will go into the ordinary criminal justice system. They will face the same, isn't it? Procedures, the same processes and mechanisms and structures as any other adult. No,
there are special protection measures. When they go to child justice, yes. there are protective measures in there,
yes,
as well that are not in all respects. In some respects, it will be as in the normal criminal justice system,
right,
where those procedures.
You understand that? So can I pose another question? It's very interesting now. Then when you're trying to tell our future community that they know, although children will have to face the restrictions on diversion, they will benefit in other respects once they're into the system by all the protections you've got here. So therefore, it's not true to say that if we apply what's here below, that they will be treated in the same manner as adults.
Not in all respects.
Yeah, it's useful to see the question you asked. Clarify for me something. But Carol is feeling uncomfortable.
No,
Carol.
Yeah.
Did I say this, Lawrence, that I'm really missing her? Right. And I said to them, you know, I'm very worried.
You said you didn't.
Oh, no, but queuing in the N1, that was separate issue as well. I said, queuing in the N1, you're a Cape Town person, I'm after all you people. But you better sign up. The fact is, also, you know, I was trying to summarize what we had reached yesterday. And unlike you, I said, I'm quite pretty and direct. I'm too wordy. And I thought it's a pretty you weren't here to summarize the whole issue. But in the afternoon, if you want to, you can slide it. You're better doing it than I am. But anyway, now that you're back, you're going to chair the afternoon session, right? You can take over, yeah. Yeah, but we'll talk about that later. Now, at the moment, can you help Carol on this issue? Isn't there a trade-off?
Yeah, well...
Like, I can't find a better word. It sounds too bad.
The point that came out to study was very crisply yesterday was that there can be absolutely no distinction between the way the law treats adults and the way it treats children.
Well, there can be distinctions.
And the view in the study group was that because, I mean, for any piece of legislation or whatever a legislature does, it has to be seen to be applying its mind rationally and reasonably and in a justifiable manner. And that any such distinction between the two of adults and children would be seen as being arbitrary action and unjustifiable. And that's sort of the point
at which you need to realize that. Sure, there seems to be some sort of uncertainty. Mr. Solomon, I think, sees it in a different light. And I, you know, my words were that we'd be skating on thin ice, that there might be justification for you know, what I could possibly even do is ask. I've got a feeling that the answer will come out what is being said in the study group, but perhaps we should get a legal opinion on this matter and I can bring it back to the committee and that could help us.
But Carol, would I be correct in saying that this limitation on diversion for children would possibly have some validity if one, a similar process is unfolding for adults? Because maybe the government is now saying, not that Parliament is necessarily the lead, the government is now saying that crime is so bad and that under so much pressure that what's happening here is the first of leg of a two-way process and they're going to apply it to adults anyway. Right. And B is that although there are limitations on diversion, once the child is not diverted and put into the system, they are not treated as adults. There are many protections for them. On those two grounds, the department could argue that they could maybe the constitutional or other challenge. Wouldn't that be a reasonable thing?
Yeah, because then it would show that it applied in mind that for a particular principle policy decision, they are deciding that both adults and children in certain cases will not be considered for diversion. So that would be justifiable. And there would be no sort of arbitrary distinction between the way children, as long as you can show that your thinking was reasonable and rational and justifiable, then that should be fine.
And of course, we'll ask for evidence that you're planning to do this for adults. We're just sucking it out of the air now because your back is against the wall, so to speak. Because at the moment you're saying there's no such discussion. So then it comes back to actually a hypothetical kind of academic consideration. I don't know why it could see me harassing this about. What's your first name, by the way, Bernard? I don't know why she's harassing you. She can speak here, and she's nodding her head, and we can speak. You got a point of view? Oh, okay. All right. Lawrence, you will reply.
Yeah, and I think I will undertake to. I think we must explore that. I think the committee deserves a response on this whole question, so we need to do that. And I'm sorry we haven't got a response to that.
Does Jackie or Anne want to say anything?
Well, the only additional consideration that I think one must think about is if you were to legislate for adults to be the same, then you would have removed the arbitrariness and the irrationality. But you're still encroaching on the principle that prosecutorial discretion is the basis for decisions to prosecute or not prosecute. So in other words, in our law, in our constitution, the prosecutor has the right to decide which cases they prosecute and which they don't. And essentially, diversion is a conditional withdrawal of charges by a prosecutor. So I think even that might run into problems, but it would certainly be, less. It would be more defensible than the current proposal on the table.
Can I ask you, can you respond, Lawrence?
Chair, yes. That dominus litis, I think that's what Anne's referring to, has been mentioned quite a bit as well. And there is possibly another view on that. I've no undertaking to get a legal opinion, and I'm going to add this to it. But my gut feeling, just to respond to Anne, is I think the dominus litis principle applies in the courtroom situation more than anything else. And Section 179(2) of the Constitution says this might be a bit unorthodox at the moment, but I'd like to back it up with a legal opinion view. It says that the prosecuting authority has the power to institute criminal proceedings on behalf of the state and to carry out necessary functions incidental to instituting criminal proceedings. This is what the comments are falling back on. Yes, that is the case, but what does that section actually mean? It's saying that that is the institution that is responsible for instituting prosecutions on behalf of the state. If there's a legislative framework that said certain things cannot be diverted, as we have in this case, through the legislative framework, I don't think the dominus litis principle goes that far. But that's something that I also take up with the state law advisors and ask them to look into it. I'm going to ask Tanda, I asked her to do a bit of research on that. And I know it's an old textbook that was written before the Constitution, but that gives you an idea. Tanda, there's a quote that you used there.
Okay, the quote from the book is the book by Lance Law and Campbell, in the 1992 edition. It provides that the prosecutor is dominating in a criminal case in criminal cases within his or her area of jurisdiction. However, the prosecutor is not at large in the prosecution of persons. In the exercise of his or her duties, must observe the limitations and act within the framework of any particular empowering statutory provision.
So I think that's one thing that I would like to just. I'm speaking now without the backing of, and I'd like to do a bit more work on that. We started this process, but I think there could be a response. It might be a bit unorthodox, but I'd like to look into that further.
It just comes in, but I'll brief you over lunch. It's about the issue of can you treat children more punitively than adults? Can you limit diversion to children but not for adults? There's an interesting argument for the reverse case of the study group, but also, basically, would it be correct to say that where we might defer in this collective House, as it were, about to what extent can the executive or parliament restrict prosecutorial guidelines. That's what the issue is really ultimately about. Now, can I check with you something? You see, my understanding may be wrong, but the guideline for prosecutors is determined by the NDPP.
In consultation, I think, within
that. As I was saying, in consultation means that the executive does have a say. It does have a say.
There must be agreement between.
Must be agreement. So it is not untrammeled, if you like. And therefore, can Parliament restrict in any way or say that in prosecutorial guidelines there are some things like we were suggesting yesterday, JJ, that when it comes to like very serious crimes, that one option was to say that children will not be considered for diversion in these three cases, say, murder and whatever, unless exceptional circumstances dictate otherwise, right? So if we were to put such a thing into the bill, would that be unconstitutional?
That's what I'm trying to say. I think, you know, I think there's a response to that, and I'd just like to get a firm response.
We would like a response. That's one option.
Yeah.
But I personally, by the way, let me just speak for myself as an individual. I really feel that we don't give conceded consideration to that thing. But I think I'm in the minority in the study group. We haven't got any final decision.
I don't know if anybody's covered this angle already yet, but my point will be along the lines of what are we trying to fix, what's broken.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the FDA can produce a report about deferment. Diversion. You know, statistics for the last few years that broken down into adult and child under 18, but basically the cases where there was diversion and what cases those were for, because you may well find. I mean, I know we dealt with it, and I think Maggie responded verbally, and has more or less indicated that there weren't any. You know, is there any problem that we've got to fix? Is there a problem? The guidelines as they stand at the moment, which apply to adults and children, is as were read out last time. Can't remember the exact wording, but except under exceptional circumstances. Is anyone being diverted from radar or from rape? So can the NPA, I think, give us a written report on what exactly the state of progress is, so that we can assess what interventions we need to make?
The NPA is here. But you see, the point here, JJ, would be, and I don't want to believe this, but I think we should move on, actually that it's not just having to fix something that ain't broken, it's also balancing out the number of rights that we are protecting of a child with also the needs and interests of the victim and the community and so on. It's finding that balance that we're looking for. So that's one stream of thinking, but there's also a stream that says let's try to balance things a bit more. That's all we think. Well, I'm not in the minority, but more or less preceding you on this issue. I just remember now. I'm counting the heads.
But Chair, I think the point is, you know, when it comes to minimum sentences, the legislature decided, look, there's a problem, the sentences are too lenient.
Yeah.
So therefore brought in minimum sentencing to correct that.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if we want to restrict prosecutorial discretion, what is the problem we are trying to fix?
Okay. Yeah, but this is not addressing the other side. I can still reply in the way I am. Let's leave it. We'll talk about it outside this meeting. It's both what you're saying and what I'm saying that I've been taking into account.
Well, yours is academic, is what I'm arguing. Because there's not you know,
no,
this whole scale diversion which is affecting anybody's rights either way. We don't even know if there is any.
But we want to put provisions into this bill that recognize that when it comes to minimum sentences, it's not just we have to also take into account the needs and interests of the victim. And people must know also that if you're 17 and you commit five murders or something, hey, this bill is not going to be doing anything about it. It's clear that the exceptional circumstances only in which they do something like that, maybe unstable or you were driven by some human emotion or whatever that was irrepressible, we will be considered for diversity. That's what we're trying to say. Am I making sense or not? If I'm not, let me receive. I will try to reorganize my thoughts and I will put it down on paper and email you. Because I think I'm holding the thing up.
No,
and I'm not being clear.
No, you're not.
Am I? But he's looking so puzzled and bemused.
Well, Chair, I mean, a 17-year-old with five murders is not going to be considered for diversion anyway. Because there aren't, you know, and it's as the prosecutorial guidelines are at the moment,
and
approved by the minister, and tabled in Parliament.
You and me, maybe also, that you're speaking more like a lawyer, and I'm speaking more like a politician. I'm saying a bill is not simply, substantive, it's not simply legal, it's not a political issue. You're communicating something. In the preamble, you seek to do that, and in some of the provisions you put in the bill. It's the fact that it's a tennis court here. It's not a thing you put in a bill, it's a list to essay you write. And we force them to do it in the political system. So that years later, nobody's challenged this issue. That may be party, but maybe. Or maybe I'm just wrong. But I don't want to engage with you. I just see. Okay, I withdraw what I say. Let's look at it. Let's go on.
Can
I just
raise one other point?
I know the obligation of me to be clear, and I'm not being clear enough, I withdraw. Okay.
The 17-year-old is not going to read the bill, or the act rather, and then be devastated when they find out that they can't qualify for that version.
That's a very facetious remark. It's ruled out of order. So it's hard to rule a country out of order, even if it's seated where it is. Okay, Lawrence.
So I think we must also, in this debate, remember, and I raised this perhaps too briefly, but, you know, prosecutors make these decisions. Prosecutors are new, and some of them are untrained, and they come and go, and I'm sure my colleagues from the NCA will vouch for this, but it's also going the other route of the safety mechanism. And I'm going to venture, I'd like to just read an extract from a constitutional court judgment. Now, I'm very aware that this constitutional court judgment revolves around minimum sentences, but I think the sentiment might just capture it's Dodo's case. And as I say, I'm very aware that this is about minimum sentences. But there's under our constitution no absolute separation of power between the judicial function on the one hand and the legislative and executive on the other. When the nature and process of punishment is considered in its totality, it is apparent that all three branches of state play a functional role and must necessarily do so. It is preeminently the function of the legislature to determine what conduct should be criminalized and punished. It is preeminently the function of the legislature to determine what conduct should be criminalized and punished. I'm just using that extract as the sentiments that have been expressed there. Both the legislature and the executive share an interest in the punishment to be imposed by court. And I realize this is revolving around here.
Yeah, I know I've just come in, but I mean, I don't think anybody is doubting that we can pass legislation banning, preventing people accused of murder from being considered for diversion. Nobody doubts that. We've got that power. Okay, I don't know, that's what Mr. Bassett has raised is concerned. That the issue is, why do we do it just for children? Why is it worse off to be a child than to be an adult?
So we've covered that ground.
Yes, I know you've covered the ground. Secondly, we went for minimum sentencing as was this case because there was a problem, we felt.
They were giving 2 years.
What is the problem? Is the NPA diverting too readily? I'm not aware of that. Let's see the stats. Can the department, seeing they're so anxious about this, come with that information? Mr. Bassett raises the point of unqualified prosecutors or whatever else. Is that a problem? Or is this just hypothetically looking for argument?
Yeah, okay, we get the point. Now, I don't know what you said, Lawrence,
make the national director.
Yeah.
Good luck. I don't want to say.
Oh, the decision about divergence. Yeah,
divergence or not.
Oh, right. Okay. All right, yeah. Okay, that's a useful comment. I don't know why you're in the debate, yeah.
And you have an inquiry magistrate overseeing the process of evidence, so there would be someone from the site support to actually look at it.
Because the magistrate has confirmed.
Yes.
All right. There you are. As long as there's a strong argument, you want to proceed.
Yes.
Or you just want to come back hard. Fine, what do you want to say?
No.
Okay. Right. Shall we move on? You must. So basically what we think about clause 11, Lawrence, is that we've covered the submissions from civil society and your reply in the debates we've had up to now. But is there something else you want to cover, Anne and Jackie, that is not being inserted into the discussion on 11?
Chair, yes, just to make the point that obviously it all rests on the decision the committee is finally going to make about the assessment of preliminary inquiries. Because our point here was that Section 11 is a roadmap for the child justice process.
Yeah.
It was added in after the committee or the chairperson or whenever that decision was made, that the bill would be bifurcated into different roads for different categories of children and offences and so on. So therefore, if the committee decides finally that assessment is for every child and preliminary inquiry is for every child, then you don't need Section 11. Even if in the end the committee were to decide to limit diversion, it can do so without a roadmap. It can do so in a very similar, simple way in a clause. So our point is that once the committee has decided fully that it is going to go with assessment and preliminary inquiry for every child, then Section 11 of necessity falls away. And in doing so, it will make this bill a whole lot easier to read.
Just tell us what Rafkin says. Not Peter Lawrence, to summarize, because he hasn't seen the text until he's watching the briefing. What did you add there, Rafkin? What did they say?
Sorry, Chair. That was just Rafkin's submission regarding how Section 11 affects particularly sexual offences and how it bifurcates how to deal with children aged differently in relation to different sexual offences. And their objection is based on the fact that if you're going to intervene with sex offenders, you can't exclude them from the possibility of these interventions, and you also need to be able to give them all the services such as assessment and preliminary inquiry. So theirs was specifically from the viewpoint of treating and intervening with young sex offenders, and how Section 11 then impacts on that, taken together with Section 57 of the bill.
Isn't one of the underlying themes, as it was other NGOs, is that the way sex offenders are treated in this whole bill is unduly different from other offenders? It's almost to imply that if you're a child and you commit a sexual offense, it's something more heinous than other crimes. Is that not their subject?
No, absolutely. There's also, part of it is Section 57 does try to say, well, okay, if you're a young sex offender, then we're going to allow you to be diverted. But if you're an older sex offender, we're not. And Rakan's position is that, no, you can't differentiate. A child sex offender is still a child sex offender, irrespective of their age. The other difficulty that Rakan has is that the Child Justice Bill significantly deals with the different types of offences gap that a child can commit from the way the sexual offences bill deals with it. So there certainly needs to be a stratifying between those pieces of two pieces of legislation.
Yes, Chair, we did consider these comments because the point that this bill makes specifically to deal with sexual offences in a harsh manner because of what's going on in society, clarity,
yeah.
And all. So that's why it specifically does this in Clause 11. And Clause 11, you should actually read with the schedule. And then if you go to the schedule, so you see exactly what happens there. If you look at the most serious sexual offences are in Part 1 of Schedule 3, Part 2 of Schedule 3, also the first six items where we limit diversion, only deal with sexual offences. So it's a specific group that did take on that matter. And it did come from the committee as well with the basis of sexual offences in the language. And the thing of how it's structured and how it's not linked to the Sexual Offences Act at the moment, it was literally taking the Sexual Offences Act and deciding. The Sexual Offences Act doesn't have any penalties in there, so that would be in the jurisdiction of whether you're in a regional court or a high court. But this really, we are dealing with this now for the first time, so that's why it's dealt with. We said certainly sexual offences are really heinous, and you've seen the reports coming out from schools and everything, and this is a way of dealing with it.
All right, and now the committee applies minds to both sides of the argument. Because this is a matter we will have to say. Whether you can see sexual offences in the way it's closed down. It's really not that. You will have to set the matter of our minds first, right? Okay, then let's go to clause 12C. Carol has got, because of what's happened this morning, has got to go away for a while in the afternoon, so she will chair when she comes. JJ, you don't want to start chairing by the afternoon, no? Now, should I inform the committee, by the way, you see, next week we're meeting on Wednesday and Thursday, and inform them while you're not here. And, JJ, you know, Lauren, you know, we normally talk of victory or death, not solemn much longer time anymore. But now, here's a guy, this sort of patriarch, he was going to go to ET next week with his partner, TJ, whom he fell in love with just because he's saved his. So, you know, CJ is here, Austin is here, Austin is here. Otherwise, JJ would have been very keen on CJ. But in any case, he then took a decision that he would not go with the people for 10 days because of the child justice law. And though she's threatened to divorce him, he's decided, no, the country comes first. So can this committee thank him and acknowledge his contribution? Ongoing national democratic transformation. Okay.
Mate, I've just detected any SPs that leaked out.
No, but I explained you won't be here. So we will give you more latitude to bring in your issues. And please, even if we don't come to a close, if you want to try them in the discussion today, so the team will note them and we will respond to them next week. So you don't think you won't be here with you. All right, then very quickly, clause 12.
Now we're going on to part 5 of this chapter, and it deals with age estimation, determination, and zero to age. Before going into clause 12, perhaps clause 12 I'll deal with separately, and then I'll give a bit of background. It provides that it revolves around the responsibility of a police official where the age of the child is uncertain, and it provides that if a police official is uncertain regarding the child's age, and that child has committed an offence, but the police official has reason to believe that the age which makes the child fall under the Act, then the police official must treat that person as a child, particularly as far as arrest is concerned and a release or detention, until the determination of that person's age at a preliminary inquiry or the child justice court has been made. Now, I know that I'm not sure that they heard today, there was a document that was handed out last week, and they had a comment to make on that particular clause. And basically what their comment boils down to is that, I don't have it.
Yeah.
They are suggesting that the word until the determination of that person's age at a preliminary inquiry for child justice court be replaced with until a probation officer or medical practitioner has expressed an opinion on whether the person is a child or an adult, or until a determination is made at a preliminary inquiry. So they want the benefit of having an opinion expressed before you get to the preliminary inquiry or the child justice court, which will help them avoid a situation where children are detained with adults.
Yes, just on that explanation of the example staff uses, they say a lot of them arrest children, and it's a very young-looking adult, and then they place that adult with the children in it, and they distort things, make it clear, and distort they have to wait until preliminary inquiry to determine the age. So they can just have a quicker response to age. So it's not a determination, it's just a statement. They can remove that adult from the children. So that's one of the examples they use, if they would want a quicker assessment. There's not yet a determination, that's a long process that will come, but just a quicker understanding.
Yeah, that takes me to what I wanted to say right at the beginning. Clause 13 deals with age estimation by the probation officer. And then the latest step is age determination. So the estimation by the probation officer and actually an order or determination finding by the inquiry magistrate.
All right, what do people feel about the Taft Amendment? Did any of you want to say anything?
Just say that this would just strengthen the argument for having all children assessed, because the assessment would necessarily look at evaluation of the child's age.
Would. Everybody wants, including unwittingly, even if they see it. I don't mean it's calculated. Okay, so anybody wants to say anything? I think what the SAP is saying is acceptable to us. You, department, you're really difficult to do. So you are also keeping to what they have said before, whether you like it or not. All right, fine, I'll be getting with this amendment. So, my friend Manala, who's going to do this? Laurie, who's going to know? We have to discuss who does what. These are amendments now. Obviously, the department will note them, but when it comes to concrete amendments, Manala, that you're going to for our side, Parliament side. So you're going to note that we're now not coming back to this. We've agreed on this amendment. This is the first amendment that we have agreed to, actually. So it's in phase one. There are some things we're going to get into in phase one. We don't need to come back. Okay. So that's the first thing, Banara, you're going to notice, right? Okay, next thing is 13.
Chair, that deals with, as I've already indicated, an estimation by the probation officer. And Sandra, you want to take us through this?
In making the estimation of the probation officer must consider any available information including the following. The previous determination of the age under this act or in terms of the criminal procedure act or in terms of the time per act, which is now the decision act. The probation officer must also consider the statement by the parent made by the parent, legal guardian or any other person who has direct knowledge of the age of the child. And must also consider the statement by the child, made by the child himself or herself, or can consider a baptismal certificate, a school registration form, or a report or any other information similar to that nature. And the probation officer may also consider any estimation made by a medical practitioner. The probation officer must submit the estimation on the prescribed form to the inquiry magistrate during the preliminary inquiry or to the child justice court before the child's appearance at any of these forums in the preliminary inquiry or in the child justice court. The estimation done by the probation officer may be altered at a later stage, and the new estimation may be recorded. That is where if the inquiry magistrate makes another assessment of the
committee in terms of the voting?
Should we just take 13? We've got a proposal from the legal aid board, the 13C. That the provision of this fully motivated the age of information. And your reply is this is already covered.
We don't have a huge problem with it, though. We said it should be read in.
Why is the legal aid board want this fully motivated? No.
Go back to the natural profession, I can get that
out.
Look, I think the probation officer has to estimate, give duty estimation on a prescribed form.
Yes,
so presumably the prescribed form
would require
can put down the need to get forward motivation. I think the legal aid board I think they're being over. Yeah.
Why do they want it? This is really your area, Jackie. You're supposed to represent all of that. The legal aid board's not an NGO, I don't know who represents them. They're not here. I'll read it later.
Yeah, we can have a look now. I don't think we've got the submission here. We can have a look at it. But I don't think they gave an explanation. But we'll just confirm that. We can have a look at it.
If they haven't, then fine. I mean, you want. I mean, really, their jobs. We held our industry to go back to them. Let's move on. They're also saying 13.4, we must add the word be recorded. No, after the word be recorded, add the word to evidence to continue.
Yeah, look, that one I actually agree with. I mean, it reads at the moment, that age estimation by a probation officer in terms of the section may be altered as a different implementation of age may be recorded. In the bullet, if necessary, at a late stage. They want it to be, should evidence of the country emerge at any stage before sentence.
Yeah,
it is clearer cut.
Yeah,
I mean, the thing about it is...
Not arguing.
And I see that the parties agree with that too anyway. If you look at the department's document, you can see...
Bravo, progress.
At sentence, it's very important to know the age of the person you're dealing with. Because, that's often when you'll get a probation officer's pre-sentence report, different from their sentence report, which might come and for the first time show that actually the child is older or younger than was initially, after sentence, and you can't change your sentence anyway. So, yeah, okay.
Let's agree to that, we're putting it off. Okay, so 14,
that's what I'm saying with the education between the two by the entire magistrate and really treatment entire to all in the judge of this court. And it provides that this, if during the preliminary inquiry or during the...
Point of order, if there's no proposed amendment to the section, do we need to go through that section?
Now, you see, an aim of them treating us rather than the history goes to the clause, but they just don't know what the clause is about. And if members have got issues of clarity, we cannot be dictated by the NGOs of the department. We also have to ask ourselves whether we understand the clause and do we want to make amendments of our own. So, that's the reason. That's the way we've done those when we're part of the stage. I don't know what you've indicated in, but we'll just speak about that later. So, on 14.1. Just go through it quickly. We're not listening to you. Just say what it is. And then the members need to be sure that we agree with the text as it is, even if the NGOs have said nothing, and even if the department said nothing. Okay. I read it last night, or the night before, so I have no issue. But, I mean, I can't speak for the committee. So, just go through 14, what's this about, basically, and then the committee will respond.
Okay, the purpose of the commander is by the entire magistrate during the preliminary inquiry. The court provides that during the preliminary inquiry or during the proceedings as the child of the court, the age of the child at the time of the commission of the inquiry, the entire magistrate or the presiding officer in the child of the court may determine the age.
We don't want to do this to you either before.
No.
What I try and do...
Members, can I just get some guidance? We have obviously read this bill on our own, okay? But at the same time, we have to look at each clause and see whether we accept it or not. So how do you want to do this process? I think it's been unfair to ask the department to leave the clause. Tell us what the clause is about overall, and then just note what each clause is, and then we ask the member on 16.1 any change to the thing. Will that be an okay? Did you have any proposals? How are we going to how have you done it before?
Well, usually we can have a specific general overview of what the particular issues are, but I mean, it would be a little bit, we've all read the book to go through the thing.
Yeah. We just go to each clause and say, do you have any changes? Because I've written the book 3 times now. So actually, Ulanani will see some pretty bored with it. It was not the issues with the actual text of the book. It's not an exciting literary novel. So, I mean, it's really boring, but I have to go through the process. And we, as soon as what we do is, we would ask the department to say what the book, the whole course is about, each subject is about, and we respond. Okay, so why don't we do it like that, Sandro and Lawrence?
I'll just try and give an overview. Yeah. This is a very, technical, long.
Yes, but the policy issue is based on.
Yeah. I think sub-clause 1, the whole clause deals with errors age, and it says that if at any stage during proceedings the presiding officer is satisfied that the age reflected on the record is incorrect, that age must be altered in accordance with section 14, and then the person must be dealt with in terms of the rest of the provisions of clause 16. So that's just the general rule. And then sub-clause 2, and I'm going to do it in very broad terms, sub-clause 2 deals with how what happens where there's errors to age in the diversion scenario. Sub-clause 3, and I can come back to the details, but I just want to give an overview. Sub-clause 2 is for diversion where there's an error to age. Sub-clause 3 deals with error where the person has not pleaded to a charge. And sub-clause 4 deals with where there's error as to age after the person has pleaded to the charge. Sub-clause 5 makes tries as a sort of catch-all clause to try and deal with any exceptional or circumstances. And sub-clause 6 is an indemnify the person who estimates or determines the age of a child and to act on and so that's an indemnification clause. I don't know, do members want me to go into, that is just an overview, a framework of what the thing looks like, and now I can go into the details.
Just do 1 quickly, okay. Sub-clause 1, 16, 1, that's a straightforward one. Any comments on 16, 1, members have got? I have the, what is the, let's do first, with what is the JD say? 16, is it close to 16, is a lot?
Yeah.
Okay, let's deal with the overall issue. Clause 16 14. The Catholic Institute says that clause 16 and 14 doesn't make a distinction between formal and informal, and is in contradiction with the rules of government. The specific group, your reply is that paragraph C should cover you for 14 to 18 years old. Yeah,
I agree with that.
So, shall we agree with this question? Anybody got any comments? Carol, is it?
No.
Ulalali?
No, not much.
Thank you for that, Carol. I mean, Ulalali. Charles Justice Alliance says, well, we can all read what it says. There's something that seems to be possible, you know what it says. What is the issue there? It's 16.
We, first of all, apart from our technical issues regarding some typographical errors, I just want to make two main points. First of all, I really do think this could be said more simpler. And it's a very, very long clause, and possibly it could be drafted and passed away. I also do feel that if we do away with the bifurcation between the different ages and offences, that will help towards simplifying it. And the other point, the main point that we were trying to say in support of that is if you look at particularly at a child under the age of 14 who was charged with a rape, for instance, and who had been diverted,
when he became, and there was an error as to age, he might have been benefiting from that diversion program, and now he will no longer benefit from that diversion program simply because there was an error as to age. And that's one of the basic arguments that we're trying to make about sexual offences. If you're intervening with a child, why stop that intervention just because you've got an error as to age? And the bill is stopping those types of interventions simply based on age.
Right. Yeah, well, it's in our response. As you said, there are some provisions in the bill which have consequences as far as age. There are some provisions in the bill which have consequences as far as age is concerned. The example the alliance is using is a necessary consequence. There are other examples in the bill of such instances. And if we just use an example, a person is one day into his 18th. Will probably lose the protection measures contained in the bill for children. It's a fact that one just cannot get away from, but I do hear what they are saying.
Sorry, I don't want to get into an argument with the child, but the point is that we fully accept that the child turns 18 and he's an adult and he's not going to be protected by the bill. What we're talking about is some children are being treated as less children than other children in terms of the Constitution, or in terms of the Constitution, all people. Persons under the age of 18 are children. But obviously, I'm sorry, that's probably the wrong example to use, but I don't think that particular example makes the argument much better.
Roland, you must agree with me, but it's a weak example, but the point is,
yes,
it's still valid.
There would be other examples.
Yeah. Can we have replies to these comments, David?
Different issue, though.
No, on this issue, some of these issues will disappear once clarity is secured on the issue of the five policies you mentioned earlier. But other issues will still remain, even if we agree on all the five things we spoke about earlier. But can you say, what are we actually saying now in respect of what the child of the alliance is doing? What is our view?
If I've understood it right, if we go for a single process, then it falls away. It's a policy issue, we've got a decision we've got to take.
In other words, there's nothing that would still be left for the committee to address if we were to do that.
In terms of, are we talking generally about Clause 16 as a whole?
There has to be. Surely some issues.
I think there would be some issues that we'd have to take into consideration.
Sorry? Capacity will be there. Okay, you want to come back over?
Yeah, I think there will be things that will have to remain in there.
But
yeah, things will
what
be
would remain? Did you know this book?
No, but the clause is necessary regardless.
Yeah, okay.
The issue is, so you need a clause which says error as to age.
Yeah.
Okay. The issue then is the points of difference in the clause, as I understand it, relate to whether we have a differential process for children according to age or according to a thing. If we take a policy decision to say we don't, then the clause would change substantially. If we take the policy decision to say it remains, then the clause would remain more or less as it is. So I don't think it's right to ask Mr. Bassett what needs to remain. I think that's it.
No, I'm saying even if we did what we keeping towards doing, even if we agreed on the five things that we discussed earlier, would there still be any outstanding issues raised by the NGO that we would have to address? That's a reasonable
But Mr. Bassett was answering what should still stay in the clause. I think it's precisely that question. Are there still issues, aside from that issue that we've got to resolve about do you have a single stream or a multi-stream process, apart from that issue, are there any other issues that need to be addressed?
Are there any other
issues? I've got one here, by the way.
Jackie, help us. Are there any other issues, Jackie? We're coming to the moment. Okay, David?
Now, mine was just actually raising from Anne Skelton's point earlier. This is a sort of belt and braces clause. Okay, as Mr. Bassett set out, number one is the matter, it's a diversion. Number two is sorry, number two is diversion. Number three is it's been charged but not yet pleaded. Number four is being charged and pleaded. And number five is the catch-all. Exceptional circumstances exist. Now, should we have, saying we're going for this belts and braces option, should we have a new clause 5, I mean make 5-6 the catch-all, and should we have a new clause 5 dealing with sentencing? And it's really a question maybe also to Mr. Skelton. Because there's a inquiry, or the issue of age is very relevant to sentencing, do we want to specifically make referencing this, the way this thing is set out, it deals with each stage. It doesn't deal with specifically with after pleading. It just deals with in the catch-all. Should we therefore have a new section which says what happens if the person has been, child has been convicted, but not yet sentenced?
Don't we deal with that feature in sub 4A2? If a child has already been convicted, that caused the record of the proceedings to be transmitted to the High Court for review.
Okay, no, that's
fine.
Covered then, yeah, okay.
But it's a very good question. I wish you'd read it last night and say this. I couldn't have just done. Okay, what else is there? Lawrence, help us?
I've got something else. I found that clause that we were looking for.
Oh, yeah, what is it?
It's clause 54A that reads that the question is the question. 54A. Where an inquiry magistrate has presided over a preliminary inquiry and has heard any information prejudicial to the impartial determination of the matter, such magistrate may not preside over any subsequent proceeding procedure with trial arising from the same fact.
So that's what answers more than it is. That's what you said. Yeah, good. Okay, let's move on. We basically say as far as clause 16 goes, we do not need to pursue the clause any further. Until we resolve the policy issue. But can I just ask you this? In 3B, sub-clause 3, it says, in the case of a child who is thought to be 18 years or older. Now, the way you define child, you provide for the possibility that a child could also be 18 years or older, under 21. There's a definition covering that.
Sure.
Sorry?
If you read B, then
it's
covering
3D. Oh, it's covering
it. Could you read it off?
I have to read it. That's something nice to read. All right, okay. All I want to tell you then is, I don't know how relevant this is, but hey, on page 19, on B, that's called, what is it, 4B. I don't know what the section 303 of the criminal procedure says. That's the schedule I was taking there. What does it say?
Yeah,
I've got
it
here. 3
and 304, I think, deal with reviews.
But will it still apply if we took the policy direction against the board? So we must clarify now. And for those of you who know what clause 303 says, because 304, I think if you all know, you started it last night.
Yeah.
And therefore, you want to just run through this bill, and then when we got it up, like happened in a certain committee, which made people think that if a 15-year-old sits or hands with a 15-year-old in some mall somewhere, it's ruled out, and there were huge newspaper articles and so on, and I was being harassed and hounded by the press, and I said, I can't take responsibility for this policy, in the previous chair. But I don't want you to face that problem in December when you're on holiday and we've watched this bill up in some clause. So I think, Lorna, I say I'm ruling on this. I don't need any mandate for it. I'm actually ruling. Well, Lani, I don't even need your consent. I actually think we must go this thing. That's the job of a committee. Those of you who get tired, like did you and all of them, you can leave, have a breather, come back and so on. No, it's just something occurred to me that there are many issues we need to deal with, and I'm going to keep off.
I was
discussing this bill, and then we bust up when we don't go to the court by court. That's what we're going to do, Lawrence. Until they go to the Speaker's office and convince her that committees should be lackadaisical in what we do. So now, in that case,
303,
JJ,
what?
Yes, sorry, did you not read 303 and 304 last time?
No, I'm not asking for the time. And
you're serious.
No, my job is to ask. I've got a question mark here. You see, I've got my notes. Right. Yeah, they are. Full of notes all over. Right, 303, Lawrence, what is it? Manar is going to check that the correct clause, the counter references, Manar. My friend? Not a word. But it'll be gone in. Let's see if it was gone. Sorry? What does that mean?
Harold read it and she assures us that it's
what does that
fine.
Mean?
It's the way it gets dealt with procedurally. When you take the record and you transcribe it and then it goes to the high court.
That's a short.
I don't know what this is. It's reasonable for me to ask. I mean, I come to a meeting. I don't know what's going on here. I didn't ask to come to this committee. And I'm ruling that unless I understand something, and unless non-lawyers in this committee do, we're not going to proceed. What exactly is Carol thinking? Explain to me simply.
Chairman,
do you know? Well, you might know because you never know. I don't know. Well, I don't know exactly what he doesn't do. I didn't do a law degree. What is it? I don't know.
Chair, just back to the clause is saying that the proceedings must be transmitted to the High Court in terms of clause, in terms of Section 303. And Section 303 is not long. It says the clerk of the court, that's the magistrate of the court, must within 1 week after the determination of a case forward to the register of the High Court having jurisdiction the record of proceedings in the case or copy thereof certified by the clerk together with such remarks as the presiding judicial officer may wish to attend thereto, and with any written statement or argument which the person convicted may within 3 days after imposition of the sentence furnish to the clerk of the court in such register, shall as soon as possible lay the same in chambers before judges that provision for his consideration. The procedural thing, what you must do, copy, certify, and just, you know, just...
Okay,
refer.
All right, anybody got any questions? So it's the correct reference. I don't know what to say. And 304 is what? You don't read it system or anything?
That's a bit longer.
You don't read it.
No, I'm not going to read it.
I don't understand what it means.
Where is 304 in the book? And must be dealt with in according to the procedure on review. It sets out the powers on review, for instance, and confirm, alter, squash the conviction, and confirm, reduce, alter, set aside the sentence. You can remit the case to the magistrate.
Okay. So we agree, that is the correct. So we can move on from 16. That's right. Is there any other question on 16? No. So apart from the policy, you're not coming back to the phase 2 and then under the adopt position. It's 1 o'clock, so we break till 2 o'clock. And then we need to read at 2 and let's go for about 5 o'clock. Now, those who have to go can go. I'll be there till 6. And it doesn't matter how many other people are. Those who want transport arrangements, we need to speak to Lolly. I think Lolly will allow me might be this way. So it's very long in the facility.
There's no need for transport arrangements because the house drives the car by itself.
All right. If the house arrives, drives the car by itself, why can't we just go to the city? What would be the problem? Lawrence, have you ever flung something? So we should just put people behind us while we're here. And people have flown in the car. At least one person. And you have. Those of you who have to go can go. I shall be at 7:00. And if JJ can, we'd like to. Thank you. Bye.